where we're going today, so yesterday we derived a path integral expression for the propagator, and we motivated that expression just based on some general considerations. So we wanted to recover a semi-classical limit. And we also had imposed this composition or property for the path integrals. So today, I'd like to sketch a more careful derivation. So there were a few questions that we couldn't address based on our heuristic motivation of that expression yesterday. So one was, what should the factor and the exponent be? So we said the exponent should have an I there, but was it I over H bar, or could there be some other factor there? That was not a question we could address. And so today I'm gonna sketch a derivation that shows that in fact that expression we derived yesterday is exactly equivalent to the formulations of quantum mechanics you're familiar with. After that, we will see how to perform calculations using path integral expressions. So, of course, it's already a very interesting formalism because it sheds some light on some conceptual issues. It's a very different way of thinking about quantum mechanics than thinking about a wave function, for instance. But of course, we want to be able to compute things with it. So later part of class, we will discuss some ways to perform calculations using path integrals in the simplest cases, the cases that we can compute exactly, known as free path integrals. And along the way, we'll discuss some relations with statistical physics. So that's where we're going today. And so our starting point, we're going to try to compute the propagator. So this is the amplitude for a particle to go from some initial position at an initial time to final position and final time. And as we saw last time, excuse me, we can write a propagator as a product of propagators. So the particle is going to go from some initial position to some final position. In between, it has to be somewhere. So this is essentially the composition property. If we use it n times, we can write this as a product of propagators. So product j plus 1 to n minus 1 of k of qj plus 1, tj plus 1, qj. Tj. So at intermediate times, the particle has to be somewhere. So we write this as a product of propagated, just from the initial position to some intermediate position, integrated over that intermediate position. And we can iterate that process. So here, this is an expression for the propagator. And if we take n large, then our time interval will be small. And we can approximately compute this propagator for an infinitesimal time. So to avoid having to rewrite this with all of the arguments every time, I'm going to rename this k. Q Qj, Qj plus one Qj. So just suppressing the time index, but it really should be there. K Qj plus one Qj is the amplitude for the particle to end up at Qj plus one. It starts at Qj. Time evolves for some infinitesimal time, delta t. So this is the time evolution operator if the Hamiltonian is time independent. And we can, if delta t is small, we can Taylor expand this time evolution operator and write this as Qj plus one should be minus here, minus I H delta T over H bar plus second order term Qj. So just Taylor expanded that time evolution operator. And we can compute each of these terms. So this first term is just Qj plus one Qj. And these two states are orthogonal unless Qj plus one is equal to Qj. So the overlap is just a direct delta. Which we can write in a more useful form. So the direct delta is the Fourier transform of one. So we can write this as dPj over two pi h bar e to the I pj qj plus one minus qj over h bar. And this next order term, consider in the breakout rooms later in the class. Okay. So, and what you'll find is that we include the higher order terms, the propagator can be written as dPj over two pi h bar. This exponential we had, e to the ipj, qj plus one minus qj over h bar, one minus I delta t h over h bar plus order delta t squared. And in fact, if you compute this order delta t squared, it's just the square of this term divided by two. So there's a question about what Qj is. So Qj is just the position eigenstate with eigenvalue Qj. And so this, not surprisingly, turns out to be just the Taylor expansion of e to the minus I delta t over h bar of h. So to compute it, we Taylor expand it and we can resum it. And here we're going to consider that h is the Hamiltonian for a particle with subject to a potential. So it'll be P, this will be PJ squared over 2M plus P of QJ. That's the case we'd be most interested in considering. And so if that's the case, then this integral we can do a few two things. So one is that QJ plus one minus QJ. So we're considering an infinitesimal time interval. So this is like the velocity times the time delta t. So I can write QJ plus one minus QJ as PJ delta t over M. I'll write it as QJ dot. So how did I get the top equation? So the top equation, so the first term I computed here, the first term is just is this one term, that's the one I computed on the previous slide. The second term is the one you'll compute later. So you'll compute this yourself when we go to breakout rooms. So rewriting this difference in terms of the velocity, you can write this as e to the I h bar pj qj dot. And then we have here this minus pj squared over 2m plus v of q. And this is a Gaussian integral. It's an integral of the form e to the ax squared plus bx plus c, which is an integral we can do. And this type of integral and its generalizations are actually very important in path integrals because they're among the only integrals we can do exactly where we've got the integral of an exponential of something. And path integrals are generally of that form. So is everyone familiar with how to do an integral of this form?
Yes, I think to get the Gaussian integral, you need to use polar coordinates to get the result. And then you can always reuse it, basically the pi or pi over a, depending on what is in front of, yeah, your variable in the exponent.
Exactly, that's right. Yes, this should be a minus sign here. Good. So it's a Gaussian integral of this form, and so we can do it, and the integral will give us this pi m over 2 pi I h bar delta t e to the I delta t over h bar m over 2 q dot squared minus v. And so this is our result for the infinitesimal propagator. And the key thing to notice here is that this integral, this exponential has in the exponent the action over h bar, I times the action over h bar. So for a free particle, the integrand is m q dot squared, for a point particle, the integrand is of the action is m over 2 q dot squared minus v, and integrated over time to get the action. And the integral over time in the limit that everything is infinitesimal just gives us this factor of delta t. So this is exactly the action. And so putting that together, if we want to get the full propagator for a finite interval, we just need to multiply this together n times, and we get product of n copies of this infinitesimal propagator. And okay, so why do we assume the composition property for K? And then Dario has a question after that. So this composition property for K basically says that at intermediate times, the particle has to be somewhere. So it's saying that if we measure the particle at some intermediate time, there's a probability of one that we'll find it somewhere. So that's what that's saying. Physically, we can also so there are other methods we can use to compute the propagator in ordinary quantum mechanics, and propagators always obey this property. So this composition property is a property of quantum mechanics that basically says that particles have to be somewhere. So particle number is, if we're in single particle quantum mechanics, particle number is conserved. So we have to be able to find it somewhere at every time. So that's why we assume that, because it's a property of quantum mechanics. Dario has a question.
I was just wondering, what do we mean by the square root of I? Because there are two square roots, right? Do we pick a particular one?
Here?
Let me check. In our Gaussian, yeah. Unless I'm misreading, it is very small.
It is, yes. So there is the square root of I there, yes. So which?
Does it matter which one we pick?
Most cases, no. To determine which one to pick, the way to check that would be to look at when this integral converges for imaginary I.
So is there a convention or?
Most applications, it turns out not to matter.
okay. I'm happy with that. All right.
The way to check it would be to go back and look at this integral more carefully.
Sorry, I have a question. In third line in the equation, you have in denominator delta t under the square. But in fourth line, I don't see it.
Okay, so there's some discussion in the chat about going back to this composition property. So the way to interpret this is so we're computing the we look at a sketch of Q versus T particle. We know where the particle is. If we're computing this amplitude, the particle's at some position here, some position here, and at some intermediate time, the particle has to be somewhere. So if we integrate over all possible positions here and compute the propagators for the particle to go in various we can do anything between here and here, but the particle should be somewhere at each time. So if we integrate over all possibilities, then we're computing the propagator in another way. Okay. And so our expression, once we take the n goes to infinity limit, gives us back our expression from before. So in this last line here, this exponential, this is just a discretized version of the action. So we've got delta t times a sum, so that's basically a discretized integral. This is the integrand of the action. And then we're integrating over all of the intermediate positions with some normalization. So that normalization is something new we couldn't determine from our arguments before. And also the normalization of the exponent. So that's something we didn't get before. But you see we cover exactly the type of result we expected with a little bit of extra information. And so this is our result. And I didn't do all of the details. So you'll fill in some more in the breakout rooms, but we see that in fact, ordinary quantum mechanics, at least assuming that you buy that ordinary quantum mechanics gives us this composition rule, gives us another way to express the propagator, namely in terms of path integrals. So path integrals really are entirely equivalent to other formulations of quantum mechanics. So next, so we can write the propagator as a path integral. So the next question is, how can we use this to compute something? How do we derive this equation? So this equation is the n goes to infinity limit of this equation. And you can take, so n goes to infinity for the exponential. This is just a discretized version of the action in as the argument of the exponential. So that gives us back the action. So s is the integral dt of m q dot squared over 2 minus v. And this measure, we can take as the definition of the measure dq. So dq really means limit n goes to infinity of that measure I had on the previous page. This, you can think of this as just a shorthand notation for what I had before. So our next question is how to actually compute this. And this I here, makes things complicated. I leads to oscillations. And questions about convergence. And sometimes it's essential to worry about this I, but other times it's not. So for most of our computations, we're going to focus on the cases where this I is not so important. And what we're going to do is basically define a related version of the propagator. So we're going to compute to most of our computations treating time as a purely imaginary variable. So we're going to take our, in particular, and take our time interval to be minus. So here's the physical time. And then we're going to do most of our computations in terms of this quantity I'll call TE. So we're going to work in imaginary time, as I'll show you in a minute. That's going to get rid of this I here. So that's interesting, something interesting to do for several reasons. So one is it makes our computations easier. Two, as we'll discuss in a minute, it shows that there's this relationship between quantum physics and statistical physics. So those are a few of the reasons to consider it. And for computations in quantum mechanics of quantities that are time independent, usually this I doesn't play such an important role. So we can still compute physical quantities we're interested in, like energies, which we'll primarily focus on, so that we don't have to worry about this I. Maybe near the end of the course, we'll come back to some cases where the I is important, and we'll see what goes on there. So this TE, the E stands for Euclidean, because if you make the reason for that is if in special relativity, you've got this minus sign in front of the if you compute the invariant interval, it's like minus, there's a relative minus sign between the time and space. If you make time imaginary, then there's a relative plus sign between the time and space. So you go from the space-time of special relativity to Euclidean space-time. So that's the origin of that name. Okay, so what we're going to primarily focus on computing is the Euclidean propagator, where we treat time as an imaginary variable. So that is very similar to what we were just discussing, except that the time evolution operator has a minus sign instead of an I. So that's the definition. And the way we can relate the Euclidean propagator to the ordinary propagator in real time is to take T to be equal to minus I tau everywhere. So here, big T is the time interval, small t is our coordinate. TE is our Euclidean time interval, and tau is our Euclidean coordinate. So if we make that replacement to see that we go from an I to the minus, minus sign, we can take a look at what happens to I times S. And that's I integral from 0 to t dt m dq dt squared minus v of q. And after this replacement, t is equal to minus I tau. So let's look at the potential term first. So the potential term first, we get, we have a minus sign, then we have a I times a minus I. So we get an overall minus sign for the potential. For this kinetic term, we have, again, the I times the minus I from the measure. We have down here a 1 over minus I squared. That gives us an extra minus sign. So again, an overall minus sign. So the relative sign between potential and kinetic terms changes from a minus to a plus. And get an overall minus sign. So we define this to be minus, it's called the Euclidean action of this trajectory. And so we have so this looks in some senses The one reason why we're doing these transformations is that it's easier to analyze integrals if we have a minus sign in the exponent than if we have an I. If we have an integral, a real integral with a minus sign in the exponent, then that suggests a natural way to approximate the integral is to look at the minima of the action in the exponent. So that makes our it easier to approximate the integrals. We don't have to worry about anything. As we discussed before, if there's an I there, all stationary points potentially contribute. But there's can be some subtle mathematical issues there about convergence, and so to avoid those issues, we're going to focus initially on this simpler math case mathematically, where we have a minus sign instead of an I. And so our expression here, our expression for KE looks in some ways similar to the expression for the partition function in statistical mechanics, which is the sum over the allowed energy eigenvalues, e to the minus beta ej. So in both cases, we're summing over something, we've got an exponential of minus something. So in this, And in fact, it turns out these two quantities are related, as you'll show in the tutorial, in the breakout rooms. The partition function can be written as the integral of the Euclidean propagator with periodic boundary conditions if the time here is equal to beta h bar. So here this is tau e is equal to beta h bar. So the inverse temperature, which is beta, is related to Euclidean time and periodic. This is a strange and somewhat puzzling relationship. It's saying that, well, statistical physics is quantum physics in imaginary time. And this is not it's a well-known relationship, but not fully understood why this is the case. But it's kind of cool, the relationship between two very different areas of physics. And so we're going to use this relation because path integrals will tell us how to compute propagators. So we're going to use that. But next week we'll look at some cases where what we're interested in computing using path integrals is the ground state energy. And so the partition function is related to the energy, and we can use path integrals to compute this. So this relation will give us a bridge between what we can compute using path integrals and the quantities we're interested in, namely the ground state energy. And we can read off the ground state energy from this relation. If we take beta goes to infinity, all the terms in this sum go to zero, but the term that goes to zero the slowest is the ground state energy term. So the ground state energy is minus the limit as beta goes to infinity, 1 over beta log z. And so this relation up here we'll discuss in the breakout rooms. And this final equation is another reason that we're discussing imaginary time, because this is the simplest way to go from a path integral calculation of the propagator to the ground state energy, which is one common thing we might be interested in computing. And we will compute that next week. Okay. So the last thing I want to say a few words about before we go into breakout rooms are free path integrals. So if S is at most quadratic, in Q, then all of the integrals in our expression for the propagator are Gaussian integrals. So we can do those exactly, as Sarah was explaining earlier. So those can be done exactly, and that's one of the few cases where we can use path integrals to compute something exactly. And the way to do that is, we have n integrals. We can do each of them exactly, and there are a number of ways that can be done. One will be, you'll discuss in the breakout rooms. So in that case, we have n coupled Gaussian integrals, and they can be done exactly. And what you'll find is that the Euclidean propagator is some normalization constant up front. Dario had a, I'll come back to that question in a minute, times e to the minus s of qc over h bar, where qc is a classical trajectory. And this sort of exponential of the action of the classical trajectory, this shows up over and over again. And we'll see in our various approximation schemes that the classical trajectory and the e to the minus, the action of the classical trajectory is gonna play an important role. So this is something you'll show in the breakout rooms. And Dario had a question about this equation for E naught. So you will show, you'll show this equation that relates the partition function to the Euclidean propagator in the breakout rooms. To go from this equation to this equation, we need to look at this expression for the partition function. So E naught here is the ground state energy. And the ground state energy is the smallest energy. So we take beta goes to infinity. All the terms in this expression go to zero. The term that goes to zero the slowest is the ground state energy. So that's going to be the dominant term if we take the limit beta goes to infinity. And we can extract the ground state energy by, well, if we take the log, then minus one over beta. So that will be the most important term. Okay. So that's all I wanted to say before we go into the breakout room. So again, I think everyone is back now. So I'd just like to spend the final minus I times seven Euclidean minutes discussing some of the exercises that you all worked through. I think from my experience in the rooms, just about everyone I got through the first one. Okay, unless there are any questions on the first one, I'll jump right to the second exercise. So the key, there are a number of ways to do it, but I just want to sketch one approach. So for our expression Z of B, can write this as the integral of the periodic propagator in Euclidean time. And one way to go from this expression to the expression involving the sum over the energy eigenstates is to insert the identity here. So we can insert a one, which is equal to sum over the energy eigenstates of the ket, the j, where j is the jth energy eigenstate, times the broad j. And if we assert that, then that turns the Hamiltonian when it acts on an energy eigenstate into the energy eigenvalue. And then some manipulation of this expression. You can look at the inner product of J with Q to manipulate it into the given form. That's one approach you take. Well, I can rewrite this first equality. So this here is K E of Q T E Q zero. So here I was assuming 5 and trying to show 4. Equation 5 on the exercise sheet. There are other approaches that essentially there are variations on this, but that's one way you could approach this problem. And for the final exercise, I'm not going to go through all of the details. Just like to make a few comments about the general approach. So what we saw, what you saw in the final exercise, for those of you who had time to get through it or start on it, is that, well, one way that we can understand path integrals is through this continuum limit by first discretizing things, then doing n integrals. So that's a procedure that can be done. Sometimes it's tedious. That exercise did involve a fair amount of algebra, but the procedure is straight, in principle, straightforward. They're not a lot of subtleties. And I mean, there's a fair amount of algebra, but each step is reasonably straightforward. So for much of the course, we're not going to focus on that n going to infinity limit. Lots of the physics of path integrals we can understand just by considering n equals 1, just a single integral. The n goes to infinity limit can be leads to a fair amount of algebra. When it's important, I'll discuss it. We're not going to do a lot of that algebra in the class. The n equals 1 case, we can understand a lot of the physics. And so in future classes, we'll often just focus on n equals 1, just doing a single integral and understanding that in full detail. And then I may say a few words, but we won't go through all the math that involves the n goes to infinity limit, because that's often tedious and doesn't always teach us a lot new. Occasionally it does, but we won't be doing that algebra. And so we've seen here today that for actions that are most quadratic in the coordinate Q, we can compute them exactly. Most of the actions we're interested in are not quadratic. So that's where we're going to go next time, is first to try to understand perturbation theory. So how can we use path integrals to understand systems whose actions are not quadratic? And the way we're going to do that is to write them as something quadratic plus a small perturbation. That way we'll understand can understand a more general system. And along the way, we will see that perturbation theory can break down. It won't give us a complete understanding of the system, and it'll break down for interesting reasons. So perturbation theory will in our discussion of perturbation theory, we'll see mechanisms and reasons for why perturbation theory can fail. And it will suggest ways to go beyond the simplest versions of perturbation theory. So we'll discuss that next week as well. So how to go perturbation theory and beyond. Okay, so we are out of time for today. I will stick around for a few minutes if there are further questions. And also feel free to, a few of you did, so thank you for emailing me with additional questions. Please do that. Otherwise, I will see you next week. Have a nice weekend.
Thank you, Dan, for interesting lecture. I have one question. What is physical meaning of the KE?
Of the Euclidean propagator. Yes, so directly, it's the physical propagator where we have, instead of putting in a physical time, we took our time to be imaginary. So it doesn't have a direct physical interpretation. Other than that, the one thing that it does tell us semi-directly is, or after just a few steps, is it does tell us about the ground state energy. So after, if we can compute KE, we can then integrate over, with periodic boundary conditions, we can integrate over Q to get the partition function, which tells us the ground state energy. So KE itself is not the most directly physical object. It's easier to compute, and it does tell us some physical information we're interested in. So we'll focus on that for the near future. We'll go back to real time near the end of the next week. But not having an eye there does make computation easier, and it does allow us still to compute some physical quantities of interest.
Okay, and how we can use propagator to give some physicals values, or how we can calculate with propagator what we can calculate with them?
So the propagator in real time is it's one of the most fundamental concepts in, well, it can be used as basically a building block for understanding much of quantum mechanics. It tells us about the amplitude for a particle to go from here to here. So if we know that, we can ask all kinds of interesting questions about how particles, dynamics, problems about how particles move, which are many of the questions we're interested in quantum mechanics. It generalizes to relativistic quantum field theories too. In a sense, the propagator is the building block of the quantum theory. Any other comments, questions?
Yes, I have a question about exercise 3. So I wasn't completely sure what the connection between the Ys and the Qs are. And also we factored out like an M and a 2 out of the integral, and we like flipped it. Like, I'm not sure if I didn't get the exponent right. Maybe it's because of the exponent.
Okay. So to go from equation 6 to equation 7, so the idea there is to do a change of variables.
Mm-hmm.
We want to do a change of variables so that we eliminate all of the other factors in the exponent. And we can do that by setting Y, so we want Y to be equal to or I guess should be m delta t h bar
okay.
over 2 square root of this times q.
Okay.
So I think that's the change of variables we want to make.